You're listening to Tom McConnell on News Talk 610 CKTV and online at 610CKTV.com. Call Tom McConnell now at 905-688-CKTV, 1-877-610-CKTV, or #610 on the Bell Mobility Network.
5 minutes after 11 o'clock. Isn't there a phrase that gets said at the last? Although Stephanie Sabrin, does she have more? No, there was something. We used to have a guy who said something on Wednesday. What did he say? Happy something. Happy something. And it wasn't Happy Wednesday.
No.
I'd know if it's. I can't remember. Did we have a guy before?
We had a guy.
Before Stephanie Sabrin?
We had a guy.
What happened to that guy?
I think he's in Halifax, Tom. Landed on his feet.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting. Joining us on the program, as she does every couple of weeks, our good friend down in London, Pam Colleen. How are you, sir? How are you, ma'am? Pam, how are you, sir? What the heck?
I'm great. How are you today? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. How are things? You make a lot of resolutions?
No. Actually, I'm not much of a resolution type person, but I came up with a list for you, though. And I don't know if you got my email, but I
did.
A list of 10.
All right. I think this is a good little, I think this is a good, simple list of 10. I also said you'll take calls if people want to have a question. And you always answer questions, so no problem. So people can call me, can text me, can send me an email. Pam will answer it. But we'll go through your top 10 list. Top 10 list for today about things you think will lead to a healthier lifestyle. And there's other consequences as well. There could be economic benefits as well, but we'll start with your, should we go 1 to 10? Yeah, we'll go 1 to 10.
Sure.
All right. So what's the number one thing you think people should do for the next year?
The number one thing people can do is go to the farm and find your food there. Buy your food at a local farm where the animals are outside on pasture, and you can actually go and witness this for yourself. So you want to make sure that these are animals that are not in an enclosed setting, that they have access to outdoors on a daily, regular basis. So that's the number one thing you can do for your health, because indeed your farm is going to be your pharmacy in the end.
And you've given us a link to two separate places. One of them we've mentioned before, just out in Grimsby, is Our Gate to Your Plate, which is all sorts of, not produce, but all sorts of products. This week they have bacon, ham, honey garlic pepperettes, fresh beef available, hopefully from Friday. And they have, it's a strictly grass-fed farm, pork available, lamb is available, eggs and chickens and poultry. So you're not talking produce, you're talking meat is available.
Yeah, we want to make sure that we get our animals, if we can, from a pasture-raised source. There was another farm that I found that's a little bit further, but I think it's still within an earshot of St. Catharines, is the Old 99 Farm in Hamilton. And I unfortunately only found two farms where they have authentic sort of settings for raising animals out on pasture. It's very difficult to find pasture-raised animal foods today. In some areas, you're going to find more than in others. Like in London, I have a huge amount of variety in sources where I can get my animal foods out raised on pasture. I know down in Windsor, they have a real tough time finding pasture-raised animal foods. I think your area is pretty sparse, but at least I've been able to find two sources. So another addendum to that would be, if you're a member of a food co-op of any kind, I know a lot of young people out there are looking for future careers, and we need more young farmers out there starting up a small mixed family farm so people can obtain this farm fresh food rather than being confined to having to feel like they have to always buy their food from a grocery store. So I think it's a great business venture if anybody's out there looking for new ideas.
And one of the problems in London, I mean, we have so much rural area in Ontario, and London, you know, growing up in London, it's an island in the middle of farm country. And in Niagara, though, we have a different focus. I mean, so much of our, because of the weather and the climate conditions are favorable to tender fruits and grapes. And of course, we have a massive wine industry down here. So, I mean, agricultural land down here has been dedicated more to that, but there are a few. There are a few, and
you're in a high carb zone. That's what you're in.
Well, yeah. We're in a high product. We get a high price for wine. I mean, it's tough for a farmer. It's like, you know what, the money I can make, selling wine.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people, or fruits, which aren't the greatest thing, but still, there's fiber and there's some benefits to fruit, and it's a local farm market. But yeah, we don't have a lot of, because we've been trying. Although someone said when you talked about turkeys, there was a local turkey provider that had their birds outside when we talked about that before Christmas.
Yes.
But I can't remember where that person was. But yeah, it's going to be some work to find
but I can tell you
locally sourced meat.
The demand is huge. People are out flocking to the country to try to find these farm fresh foods, because every time we have a foodborne illness outbreak like we did with XL Foods here in Canada, people are questioning the food supply and questioning these unhygienic conditions that these animals are being raised in these factory farms. So I think that the only way to go is up. Unfortunately, what we're dealing with here is we're dealing with a lot of restrictions based upon government regulations. So it's very, very prohibitive. It's very much a deterrent to start a small family farm today, because the regulations are just so incredibly unrealistic. But the way we can turn that situation around is by changing how we buy our food. So it's up to the consumer, essentially, to go out and be actively seeking these foods so we can make the appropriate vote.
Now, there are two alternatives. One, not far from the radio station, is a butcher shop that I have gone to in the past, Pilgrim's Drug-Free Meats, where they source out for you. I mean, the naturally raised meats. So that's not far from us on Welland Avenue. And I know that's a popular location. And as well, we have Lakeland, which is game meats, where it is locally. Well, I don't know how local, but I imagine a lot of it's local. It is. They have a huge game meat selection. So you're not going to find grain fed game meats.
Good. Excellent. Well, that's a great choice. So the second, if we can move on to the second resolution you could make for yourself, is to avoid the middle aisles at a grocery store.
Okay.
And in avoiding the middle aisles of a grocery store, of course, you're going to avoid getting things like GMOs, hopefully, in your diet. And about 70% of the foods in the middle aisles of a grocery store contain at least one ingredient that's genetically modified. And we know that there's a lot of health risks surfacing in the scientific communities warning us that we need to avoid these foods. And unfortunately, they're not labeled. So one way to avoid them, of course, is to avoid those middle aisles at a grocery store. And another way to avoid them, of course, is by shopping for your food at small local farms as well. And make sure you're just more conscious of cutting out or dramatically reducing commercially processed foods as a general rule. And avoid things even like juice, which I know you can't find always in the middle aisle. Sometimes the juice is in the outer aisle of a grocery store. But certainly avoid drinking juice. And, of course, boxed cereal. Those are two very popular foods, juice and boxed cereal, but those are not foods really that I would consider or deem healthy whatsoever.
All right. Number three is something that a lot of people have a tough time overcoming. Don't you think? I mean, we're so fat phobic in our society that we were like, oh, fat, it's got to be fat free this, fat free that. I'm like, but you still need flavor. And what they do when they cut out the fat, they added in sugar. And it turns out the more we cut out the fat, the fatter we actually become. There's not the strongest link between dietary fat intake and body fat composition. There's a big link between sugar intake and body fat.
Right. And I think we have some good news coming around the corner. I think I mentioned to you that there's an initiative going on in the United States right now with Dr. Peter Attia and Gary Taubes. And they've basically aligned themselves to do research to show the benefits of animal fat in the diet. So that's a new initiative that just started. It was announced in the New York Times back in September. But also, I received word yesterday that even Dr. Oz is starting to eat crow. Even on his show, I think, I don't know if the show has actually aired as yet, but I got this news yesterday morning, and I haven't seen the episode. But he's got a show that has been aired or will be aired entitled something along the line of, has everything we've heard about cholesterol and animal fat been a lie? So now even Dr. Oz is starting to air this information, and that goes against everything his show represents, because he's always been about promoting a high-carb, low-fat diet. And that just, unfortunately, he's been a big perpetuator of this this myth that animal fats and cholesterol is going the dark side. So if he can see the light, eat some crow, then I think we have a chance at seeing North Americans get healthy again.
And one of the things a lot of people, and they're like, well, why should I eat fat though? Why should I eat cholesterol? I mean, cholesterol is bad for me. Fat is bad for me. But I mean, forget about even the body fat and the fat connection, where, you know, there's so much more. I mean, we have stronger links with sugar and processed grains and you know, carbs going and being used and stored as fat. But I mean, the body itself, it needs nutrients in fat and cholesterol as building blocks for not only hormones, but every cell requires fats, do they not?
That's right. And I think just to bring people back to a state of peace and calm and relaxation over eating animal fat and cholesterol, I think we need to put things into perspective. I think we need to remember that before World War II, that we did not suffer with animal fat and cholesterol phobia, that we gladly ate most of our calories from animal fat. In fact, we would have eaten about 70% of our calories from animal fat prior to World War II. And before World War II, we were actually much healthier then, both mentally and physically, than we are today. This fiction, this fantasy that somehow animal fat and cholesterol joined the dark side was strictly done for industry purposes, because the people who really initiated the fear-mongering in the first place were the edible oil industry. So these were the people who had vested interests in producing things like soybean oil, corn oil, cottonseed oil, and now, more recently, the canola oil. So this is just, it was something called negative nutrition. It's a marketing ploy only. And when you hear anything demonized in the nutritional field, you have to understand it's probably generated from a competitor of some kind.
Pam Colleen joining us on the program. Top 10 things to be healthier this year. Top 10 list for today. So the top three: start sourcing your food at a local farm, avoid the middle aisles of the grocery stores, and overcome your fat and cholesterol phobia. We'll talk about the next couple when we come back. And if you have a question for Pam, something's on your mind, you can always give her, you can call us, and I can connect you right now, 905-688-2582. 1-877-610-2582, #610 on the Bell Mobility Network. Email me, McConnell@610cktb.com, and or send me a text, 61010. 61010 is the text message. Back with more with Pam Colleen right after this on 610CKTV. Yeah. 22 minutes after 11 o'clock. Was the phrase, Kevin Jack, happy hump day? Was that the phrase?
I believe that might have been it, Tom.
Might have been it. Can Rings we get Stephanie bell. To say that?
Rings of I don't know about
Can
that.
We get... I'll send her a note.
It might be a moral inhibition.
Pam Colleen joins us on this beautiful Wednesday Wednesday morning. Pamela, I got a couple of quick text messages. How can someone and their kids on Ontario Works eat healthy? There is no money for fresh fruits or vegetables or meat, and food banks may only have canned foods, pasta, and beans.
Mm-hmm.
So on a very limited, tight budget, where do you start?
Well, you have to basically prioritize your spending. I know it's very difficult for people on a very limited budget. I do work with people who are on disability, so I have to deal with this issue on a very regular basis. Yes, I mean, there is a whole political realm where I think that more needs to be done to help people make sure they have access to these nutrient-dense foods, including at your food banks and so on. But in your own home, what you can do is just prioritize your spending. Try and make sure you're eliminating any extraneous type of spending and focus on finding the most nutrient-dense foods you can. If you stay away from those middle aisles of a grocery store, actually, those foods are actually pretty expensive when you think about it. They're rather expensive, and they're not giving you the nutrition that you need. In fact, they're probably hurting your health. But if you really stick to the nutrient-dense foods, I find people actually save money if they stay to the outer aisles of a grocery store and just focus on the essentials. So if you're just eating sort of a bacon and egg style breakfast and meat and potato style lunch and dinner and avoiding all of the highly processed commercial foods in the middle aisles, people tend to be just fine on a very limited budget. It's about prioritizing where you spend your money. So try to find a way to prioritize your spending so you're not buying these extraneous things and focusing on your health and making sure you're obtaining the most nutrient-dense foods possible.
And that's an interesting point you make in terms of if you eat better food, you will require less of it. So, I mean, it's not as if you just, you know, and there are, you know, you can make the case, well, you know, I can't afford it. You can make, you don't have to get filet mignon, you know, in terms of a beef selection, but you'll need less food. That's
right.
The thing.
I mean,
that you'll need less.
Hamburger, I'm happy if they buy hamburger.
Yeah.
As long as they're eating red meat, I'm a happy camper. There's a book out there, I haven't read it yet, but it's a woman who wrote a book about this issue, and it's called Primal Tightwad. Of all titles, Primal Tightwad.
I like that title. That's a great title.
I'm tired of hearing people, you know, coming up with excuses for not eating nutrient-dense foods. So she came up with strategies in a book, and basically this book is targeted for people who are on tight budgets and do want to eat nutrient-dense foods. I have not read the book, but I have to assume that she's saying very similar things to what I've just conveyed over the phone here. So anyway, do the best you can with what you have, and just try and just imagine what your great-great-great, you know, grandparents would have been eating, and try and mimic that diet as much as possible.
And I will say, as the person who does, I don't even know if I do the most of the shopping, but I certainly do enough of the shopping in my house, a nutrient-dense food that people often overlook in terms of what it packs but is not expensive are eggs. That a dozen eggs you can get for, even if you buy the best free range, is really only going to be about $3.99. I mean, that's the best eggs you're going to get. A dozen is $3.99, which means each egg is less than 40 cents. You know, each egg is about 35 cents. Two eggs is a decent portion, 70 cents. I mean, even if you have three eggs, that's a dollar. I mean, that's pretty, I mean, nothing is free in life, but that's pretty reasonable for...
The other thing I tell people is if you can prioritize your eating and get some energy, you know, if you're running on one or two cylinders, you're lucky if you can work full-time, you know, or part-time. You're really very fortunate. If you're running on one or two cylinders and forcing yourself to go to work every day and can handle one job, perhaps only part-time, but if you get some energy, right, then you might have some energy to go out and find a better job or find a second part-time job. But when people are lethargic and fatigued and brain fogged, they're not going to be able to go out and derive a good income. And so get energy, get healthy, and go out and make more money eventually as you're healthier. And then maybe you can obtain these foods from farm fresh sources.
Quickly, someone said, I missed the name of the farm in Grimsby. It's called Our Gate to Your Plate, and you can actually go to their website, ourgatetoyourplate.com, and they will have it. Here's a question via text. What's the best type of yogurt to buy?
Well,
you've talked about
yogurts,
this.
Yeah, most of the yogurts in the grocery store, unfortunately, are no better than pudding.
However, there are some good ones.
I recommend a lot of the commercial yogurts out there. I know that Astro, in terms of a Balkan-style plain yogurt, is a decent quality as far as a more commercial brand. So Astro, you'll see it all, you know, in the yogurt section. It's very commonly recognized. It's got a red and white label.
And recommend Greek-style yogurt, though,
well,
don't
Greek, all those Greek-style, every single one I've seen is low-fat.
Well, I know I've seen one that was regular fat.
Okay, but then
Oikos.
You have to look and see if there's milk solids.
Oh, I see, now you're going to a different level. I get rid of the low fat. I'm like, well, they have to replace something. So I went and just had a regular, Oikos had, I think, 7% fat, which I don't know. It was the highest fat content of the yogurt at the store.
Well, that's good. But try to avoid anything that has anything along the line of milk solids added to it. If you see the word diglycerides on it, try and avoid those dairy products. You want to see as few ingredients as possible on the label for your yogurt and your kefir.
Okay, let me squeeze.
You might be better off going to a health food store and making sure you're reading the labels there. Even at the health food store, though, you're still going to see potentially lowered fat dairy products, which you want to avoid.
All right.
You want all the fat you can get.
Hello, how are you?
Stephen, how are you? You got a comment for Pam?
Yes, I do. In terms of yogurt, I buy my own white yogurt and add my own fruit to it and honey, and it's just as good as the regular yogurt with honey.
Excellent.
I mean, with fruit.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, and for cereal? Hello?
What do? For cereal, I'm not a big fan of boxed cereals at all.
I buy oatmeal or porridge.
Yes. Yeah, and if you're eating oatmeal, though, make sure you soak it overnight first.
There's noise in the background.
Oh, that's our music going to break.
Sorry. We can talk about it after the break, Tom.
All right. We'll talk about it after the break. You got more of your top 10 things on for a healthy 2013. Pam Colleen joins us. News is next here on 610 CKTB. After 11 o'clock, Pamela, here's another farm to add to your list in the Niagara region. Chenu Farms, Chenu, C-H-E-Z-N-O-U-S, Chenu Farms in Stevensville, all organic and free-range chickens.
I love it.
So Chenu Farms over in Stevensville is another one. And then someone wrote in, and I wrote them back as a clarification, and it may be pasture pork with non-GMO grains and eggs. $2.75 a dozen in eggs are the eggs.
Wow.
But I'm just getting the name. They didn't send a name, so hopefully they'll provide a name. And then let's go back to your list. So here we left off. Source your food at a local farm. Avoid the middle aisles. Overcome fat and cholesterol phobia. And following that up, overcome your salt phobia. The more I read on salt, the more interesting it becomes in terms of the link between salt and bad health is so non-existent.
I'm glad you said it that way.
I mean, there's nothing there. There's nothing there.
There's no basis for the salt phobia at all. You really want to enjoy your salt for sure in your diet. It's going to help at so many different levels. Number one, salt is a natural antidepressant. It's a natural hypnotic, so it can help people sleep at night. It helps in terms of building the hydrochloric acid in your stomach. So for people who burp a lot and have a lot of bloating and so on, that's one of the signs of that is that you're not producing enough hydrochloric acid in your stomach. And you need to have salt in your diet in order to fuel and actually produce that hydrochloric acid. So salt is a very essential thing to add to our diets. The salt phobia is very new. Our ancestors would be rolling over in their graves if they saw us afraid of eating salt. Every culture throughout all of humanity enjoyed salt in their diets. You know, it's just been such an incredible commodity over the years because people know that they need it. They used to use it, yes, for preserving foods, but also in terms of when you're making food, of course, from a very superficial standpoint, it helps to enhance the flavor
yeah.
of the food, and that's a big part of the eating experience.
I mean, one thing people, it's tough to understand, but people who are on higher salt diets live longer than people who are on low or restricted salt diets. And people are like, once they're confronted with that, they're like, oh, right. How do you explain that? I mean, that's, you know, people are like, oh, well, maybe it's something else. And it's like, no, maybe reducing your salt. There was, and when you go back and look at the history of the studies, that there was never a clear linkage between a reduced salt intake and a longer or healthier life. It just wasn't there.
That's right. It's a complete fabrication. And again, this means that consumers need to be discerning when you hear any kind of health information. You need to go back in history and see what the basis is. You can't just say, oh, in one or two or three generations that we're going to be fine on a low-fat diet, a low-salt diet, because clearly we've been listening to this advice now for a few decades, and look at how sick we are. So clearly that advice is unwarranted.
Now, this next one is going to take a little bit of time, not in terms of months or years, but a little bit of time out of people's days, which I think is one of the biggest hurdles to overcome. We're so time compressed, we're strained, we're all, you know, I don't have any more time, but you want people to plan ahead to make three square meals from scratch, and a majority of those calories from animal fat.
That's right. And so it does take a little plan, you know, a little time to, you know, do a little situation management and make sure that you can forecast these meals. If it means writing down a grocery list on a Sunday night, I do have ideas on my website at pamcolleen.com where people have submitted articles where they strategize over how to accomplish this goal. But however you can do it, I would encourage you to do it. But don't ever think that you have to be Martha Stewart. You do not have to spend a lot of time to do this. You just need to spend some time to do it.
And planning.
It's just a conscious choice.
And I like how on Sunday, plan your meals so you can plan your grocery shopping. And it's like, or whatever time of the week you want to do it. Plan it. Okay, this is what we're going to have this day, this day, this day, this day. It doesn't have to be complex. Food does not have to be. It doesn't have to be. You're not having a dinner party every night. It has to be a simple and healthy and in a time efficient manner, but it can all be done. It can
That's
all
right.
be done with
a
little planning.
Roast, Tom, if you make a huge roast, right?
Yes.
And then you slice the leftovers and turn them into sandwich meat. Right, so then you're staying away from the commercial deli slices. You can make them yourself at home. You're going to actually save money doing that. And then on top of that, you can use the carcass and make bone broth, which is incredibly medicinal. It is also on my top 10 list here. So you're going to kill a couple of birds with one stone by making a nice big roast on a Sunday and using the leftovers for future meals over the course of the week.
Now, number six, count carbs. Try not to exceed 72 grams per day.
Right. And so what that means is you have to go to websites potentially where they count your carbs and you can look up and see how many carbs you're eating in the day. And the reason why I put this advice on there is because so many people out there are what I call carbivores, right? They're addicted to carbohydrates.
Carbivores.
And yeah.
I have never heard of that. I can't believe I haven't heard of that. That's a brilliant turn of phrase.
Yeah. Well, there's millions of carbivores here in Canada, and it's really dysregulating for the nervous system. It's very hard on the body. So one way to see how many carbs you're eating in a day is to just simply go to a random carbohydrate counter website and count your carbs. And I can guarantee you a lot of your listeners are probably eating about 200, even 300 grams of carbs a day. And that's not healthy. So I use the figure 72 grams a day based on the work of Dr. Wolfgang Lutz, who wrote the book Life Without Bread, which is a jewel of a book. It's a really important book to read if you want to read a book about this. He was a medical doctor who for 40 years limited carb intake for all of his patients, and he saw nothing but good things happen in terms of their health. But it's just about a matter of saying, you know, we didn't have greenhouses during the last ice age. We didn't have refrigerated trains until the 1860s. We didn't have refrigerated trucks until the 1940s. So we couldn't have eaten a lot of carbohydrates in our diet, plant-based foods. We couldn't have. And it's just illogical for us to go from this high-fat, low-carb diet pre-World War II and suddenly switch to a high-fat, low-carb diet pre-World War II to a high-carb, low-fat diet post-World War II. It's not working for us. Our bodies are not designed for all those carbohydrates.
And, I mean, a simpler way to count the carbs, if you don't want to go online or you can't find one, remember, most foods have labels now. There, you can just, if you just want to do it pen and paper, you know, you can find out that two slices of bread, whatever your toast was this morning, has this much carbs. And then, you know, you can just, if you just want to follow it along that way, it's a simple way, but you'll get to a high number rather quickly.
Yeah,
it's amazing how
bread. Two slices of bread is about 24 grams of carbs. Right?
There you go. Yeah. So It's amazing. It doesn't take long before you're like, oh, yeah. And people forget the Italian's pasta is a side dish. It's not a whole plate. You know, it's not a massive plate. It's a side dish. It's an accompaniment. It's not supposed to take over the whole plate. Start making lacto-fermented foods like sauerkraut, pickles, and how do you pronounce the last word?
Kvass. It's one of our original soda pops. And actually, soda pop used to be healthy for us if you made it yourself. And I have ideas on my homepage at pamkaleen.com, but I would highly encourage people to get Sally Fallon's cookbook. It's called Nourishing Traditions. And in there, she has recipes for making lacto-fermented sauerkraut, pickles, and beverages like kvass.
Now, what's wrong with commercially? What's wrong with my regular Bix? What's wrong with my regular sauerkraut? What's missing from them?
Well, what you want is you want the benefit of the live culture. You want the probiotic, because these are probiotic-rich foods that are going to help nourish your gut flora and keep your gut flora intact. So they're important for your immune system, I suppose, is the bottom line. And so this is just medicine that you can make right on your kitchen counter. It's a fantastic experiment for your kids to get involved with. They can learn about biology. They can learn about chemistry as you're making these foods right in your own kitchen. And it's a fantastic cost-saving measure as well.
And you talked about this, and we went over it, and I have to say I failed in my attempt to make bone broth, because I didn't have time. That's the only thing that held me back, because after our big meal, we were leaving for the cottage the next day, and I couldn't stick around to make the bone broth. However, next feast, I promise I will make bone broth.
Good.
And that's number eight.
I'm going to hold you to that, Tom.
Okay, and that's number eight, bone broth.
Absolutely. And remember, we spoke about it before Christmas, and I talked about Chef Lance Roll, and he's got a website, bonebroth.com. There's all sorts of references all over the internet on how to make bone broth. A very simple, easy thing to do to create medicine in your own kitchen.
And we'll take a quick break, and we'll come back with the final two as well. And I mean, just because they're down on the list doesn't mean they're necessarily less important. But, you know, it's a fascinating little list Pam Colleen's put together. For more information, you can always go to her website, pamcolleen.com, pamcolleen.com. She is a nutritional therapist who helps people who are formerly carnivores try to get healthy. Carnivore. I never have heard of carnivore. I can't believe. What a great word, carnivore. Because as I've been saying repeatedly over the last couple of weeks, once I found out this little trick in terms of how your body responds, I'm like, oh, that just changes everything. There is no off switch for carbs, that your body cannot tell when it's had enough carbs because it was never, you know, a big part of our diet. So that's why no one evolved to have an off switch for carbs. We do when our stomach's full, like dogs, do we stop eating carbs. That's why you can go through a whole box of crackers or a whole thing of cookies or eat as much bread without getting any satisfaction from it. Because there's no off switch. There's none. Unlike with meats, or unlike with proteins, unlike with fats, where there are off switches. Your body will tell you when you're full. 45 minutes after 11 o'clock, back with more. One more segment with Pam Colleen next on 610 CKTB. 50 minutes after 11 o'clock. Don't mean to rush anybody, but I got a number of things to get through in the next 10 minutes with Pam Colleen. I got a couple of questions. I got a website to ask you about. And I got your final two entries on the top 10 list. Number nine, what's number nine? After bone broths, what's number nine?
It is making sure that if you are eating grains, nuts, and seeds, that they're traditionally prepared. And I'm glad we're bringing this up now. I know we kind of cut the caller short earlier when he called in at the bottom of the hour there, and he asked about oatmeal. You keep in mind that these nuts, grains, and seeds contain what are known as anti-nutrients, and they need to be broken down prior to consumption. So if you are eating these foods, make sure, for example, with oatmeal, that you're soaking them overnight first before you cook them up for breakfast in the morning. And if you are eating things like bread, make sure it's a traditionally prepared sourdough bread, that type of thing. So be very, very aware of this, because we can really, really damage our digestion by eating these foods without proper preparation.
And there's an interesting one of the books, Wheat Belly, that is popular these days, also talks about how the wheat grain itself is different today than it was generations ago. And that's presenting problems for a digestive tract.
Right. I don't think he understands that grains need to be prepared properly first as well. I think that's missing from his book.
Okay.
But in Sally Fallon's cookbook, she addresses that issue in her book, Nourishing Traditions, as well. So if you are eating grains, again, if you keep that number in mind of 72 grams a day, try not to exceed eating that much sugar in a day. And that includes from things like nuts and grains and seeds and so on.
Finally, I know you're not a big fan of supplements, except cod liver oil you're a big fan of.
Yeah, cod liver oil, very important addition to your diets, because it is going to give you a good source of vitamin A, vitamin D, and even cholesterol. So it's a very nutrient-dense supplement. It's very difficult to get enough of these fat-soluble, they're called fat-soluble vitamins, that's vitamin A, vitamin D, vitamin K. It's very difficult to get these in our diets. So we do need to supplement. And cod liver oil is a very practical way to get to make sure that you're getting enough of these fat-soluble vitamins. Remember, Tom, it's the fat-soluble vitamins that are crucial for supporting your nervous system. They're crucial for things like hormones and neurotransmitters. They're crucial for so many different functions in the body. And it's since we've been on this low-fat diet, we have reduced our consumption of the fat-soluble vitamins. And in healthy cultures around the world, that's one of the main observations that Dr. Weston A. Price made, was that they got adequate amounts of these fat-soluble vitamins in their diet. And when he saw that they were getting enough of the fat-soluble vitamins in the diet, that they enjoyed radiant health.
Now, a couple of questions via text, then I have one via email, and then I have a website I want to ask you about that looks to be fantastic. Bob wants to know, does Pam juice her vegetables like beets, celery, carrots to get a jolt of energy?
No. Now, that energy is false energy. You're just getting a buzz from all that sugar. I have juicers sitting in storage somewhere that I'd be happy to give away to somebody I don't like. I'm not a fan of juicing, period, because you're isolating the juice from the fiber, and when you take it into your body, you're going to spike your insulin levels, and that's what we're trying to avoid here. We want to avoid spiking our insulin. We want that insulin rising very, very slowly, gradually, and we don't want to put ourselves in a roller coaster ride. And unfortunately, that's what juicing will do, whether or not you buy it commercially in a store or you make it with a juicer fresh at home. I used to juice. I used to teach classes on juicing, and now I actually detract everybody. All of my students are told not to juice, even when they hear all these glorious claims about juicing.
Are potatoes good, from a texter?
Well, I'm Irish and Scottish, and so my ancestors would have eaten tubers like potatoes. We've been eating tubers for thousands of years. I think that they're fine to eat. I mean, certainly, they're food that can be preserved in a cold cellar for an entire year. They're very practical food to eat. But again, you don't want to eat too much of any kind of carbohydrate, including a tuber. I know that there's a lot of demonization of tubers out there, but it just doesn't make any sense to me. We grew up in a region in southern Ontario here where we've been eating tubers for generations, and we did very well eating tubers. But you just don't want to ever overconsume any kind of carbohydrate in your diet. If you're sticking to that window or that ceiling of 72 grams a day, you're probably not going to overconsume things like tubers. My philosophy is if I sit down and have a steak and a potato, I use that potato as a vehicle for giving me lots of butter and high-fat sour cream and maybe even some bacon, Tom. But I'm not going to eat the entire potato. I'll be lucky if I eat one quarter or one half of that potato, because I'm going to be so full by eating the steak and the butter and the sour cream that I won't be able to eat a lot of the carbohydrate on my plate.
Here's another texter. If too many carbs are bad, why don't we see more fat East Asians who eat a lot of rice?
Well, you have to be cautious in that, because really the Asians eat a lot of animal fat in their diet. They eat a lot of duck fat and pork and all the affiliated fats from all the animals that they grow. They if you ever go to a Chinese restaurant, you'll see on the menu that there's a lot of meat, there's a lot of fish, shellfish, pork. You know, they eat a lot of animal fat in their diet. So it's a myth that they eat a lot of rice. Yes, they eat rice. But I wouldn't say they eat a lot of rice. In the cities, in poor areas, they're going to eat more rice. But in the country, in their traditional setting, under their polyculture agriculture setting, they're going to eat adequate amounts of animal fat in their diet. The thing that they do that my ancestors wouldn't have done is they probably eat more plant-based foods in their diet than my ancestors. Hence, they tend to be smaller in size and stature. But they're still eating adequate amounts of animal fat in order for them to have healthy brains and healthy nervous systems and endocrine systems and so on. And other cultures around the world, they may eat a little bit less animal fat than, say, my ancestors did, and maybe more carbohydrates in their diet, but it was still enough to keep them healthy mentally and physically.
Here's one from Marianne. My husband has had high cholesterol since he was 35 years old. He's now 45. The family doctor put him on Mevacor, and he had nothing but trouble, aching muscles, etc. For the past year, he's been off all medications for lipid lowering, and his levels are around 9. I don't know what that means, but you may know. Of course, as his wife, I worry about atherosclerosis. What can he do naturally to help either lower the cholesterol or to live with it without a problem? Any info you can give us would be so appreciated.
If she wants to send me an email, and I'll send her a lot of references about the cholesterol myth. If you listen to people like Dr. Dwayne Gravelin, he writes books like Lipitor, The Thief of Memory. He's a harsh critic. He's a medical doctor. I think he was an astronaut, actually. But at any rate, he was taking Lipitor and just noticed all sorts of adverse effects and started realizing how dangerous these drugs really are. And so he's written some books on the subject matter. And if you just Google in cholesterol myth, you'll see lots and lots of doctors are coming out and actually are ardently against the use of these drugs now because of the deleterious side effects of these drugs. But if you want to email me, I'll send a whole bunch of references.
All right. And finally, the emails, the website I just became aware of was the Nutrition Science Initiative, NUSI.org.
And that's Gary Taubes and Peter Attia, yes.
And so that would be a great place for people, if they want to understand the science a little more, as a great place to go to understand the science a little more.
That's right. And I'm also just, if people are interested, I have some upcoming events people might be interested in. I'm doing the connection between copper and dental health at the Healthy Mouth World Summit for free online on January 17th, and they can register at my website, PamClean.com if they go to upcoming events.
All right. So any more questions, any more inquiries, PamClean.com. And there you have links on how to get a hold of you as well.
Absolutely.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for starting off 2013 with us and making it as healthy as possible.
Thanks so much, Tom. Happy hump day.
Thank you.
Okay, take care.
I'll need to get my cholesterol in. 11:59 is our time. I'm getting cracks now from Pam Colleen on my sex life. What the heck? Is this the line we have? We could. Stephanie Sabourin coming up next with the news. Following that, it's Big Joe Cahill and the Superstar Joe Show. Thanks to Kevin Jack for producing this program. My name is Tom McConnell. You're listening to 610 CKTV.